This is the Brian Nichols Show. I'm your host, Brian Nichols, and I must say, it's fun to finally be able to announce this podcast as a part of the We Are Libertarians Network. Shout out to Chris Spangle. This has been in the works now for quite a while. So, you know, I'm officially excited to get things going here with the official, the Brian Nichols Show podcast. So, for those of you who have not heard me on We Are Libertarians before, just a little bit about me. My name is Brian Nichols. I'm hailing from the East Coast over in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So, a little bit about me. I am currently the associate editor at the Libertarian Republic. .com, which is the website founded by current United States senatorial candidate Austin Peterson. I've been writing there since August of 2016. But prior to that, I have quite a bit of experience both in local and state politics as well as some national politics as well, dating back to 2012 officially was my true immersion into the national political scene, working on a congressional campaign as the mobile field representative for a congressional candidate. Prior to that, though, working on several local campaigns from county legislator to county clerk, sheriff, as well as up to state assembly in New York State. But a little bit about what we're looking to do with this podcast here going forward. So the goal of this podcast is to be a weekly podcast covering the week's top news through a libertarian lens and perspective. Each show is going to be hosted by yours truly, Brian Nichols, with various libertarian and conservative guest hosts who will be joining us throughout the year based on their availability. But also what we'll be doing is also featuring some monthly interviews with some noted guests within not only the libertarian movement, but also the conservative movement, media, and politics in general. In addition to the monthly interviews and weekly programming, the Brian Nichols Show will also be bringing in liberal, democratic, socialists, and yes, some communist voices just to discuss and debate some relevant topics in regards to recent news, to bring some different views and different mindsets to you, the listener, so we can at the very least try to have an ability to debate and learn from the other side, not necessarily in order to agree with the other side, but at the very least to hear their arguments, and hopefully we can walk away with a sense of understanding one another and a situation where we can say we agree to disagree. Now, each show is scheduled to be released on the Friday at the end of the week with the goal of, this is the ultimate mission here, the Brian Nichols Show is for libertarians, conservatives, Republicans, moderates, and even those on the left, for the goal of helping educate individuals who are actively seeking a political news program that objectively covers the week's news. With the overall, and this is my main goal for the Brian Nichols Show, is to educate, inform, and enlighten. And the reason I say that is because I've noticed too often in libertarian circles, we seem to get caught in our own little groupthink echo chambers. And I find that to be very concerning because I think we sometimes lose focus as to what the goal should be for us in terms of what our mission is going forward. So let me rewind a little bit in terms of discussing why this podcast became what it is prior to starting on with Chris Spangle for the We Are Libertarians Network. I was hosting my own podcast over at the Libertarian Republic called the Around the Republic podcast, in which we did a very similar type of weekly review with the top events of the week. I also was able to interview some great people, you know, just to name a few. We had Cliff Maloney from Young Americans for Liberty, John Ziegler from Mediaite, Jason Stapleton from the Jason Stapleton program, Super Mexican from townhall.com. So really the main thing with regards to my experience, not only within the confines of my former podcast, but also with regards to the network that I currently write for, the Libertarian Republic, is I find that it seems a lot of the articles and a lot of the media that we disseminate in libertarian circles tends to be read by those only within the libertarian circles. And during my time here at the Libertarian Republic, I did focus quite a bit on writing some pieces from what I like to consider to be a recovering Republican mentality. I myself came to libertarianism around 2012, and I've maintained my party identification as Republican, and I identify myself as a small L libertarian. I did vote for Gary Johnson here in the 2016 election. And I've been very vocal in terms of helping those libertarian candidates across my greater Northeast area, be it Dale Kearns running for United States Senate in Pennsylvania, or Larry Sharp running for governor of New York State as libertarian candidates. But I've come to find that the best means in terms of reaching out and trying to disseminate a libertarian message is unfortunately through the platform that is the Republican Party. Because, and I understand that this will ruffle a lot of people's feathers right away for this podcast, but just through my personal experience and being objective and looking at where the Libertarian Party stands here in 2018, we are the third largest national party in terms of political identification throughout the United States. Not counting, of course, those individuals who do not identify with any political party, which would be a plurality of American voters. So with that being said, we have to acknowledge the reality that the Republican Party is indeed the second largest political party in the United States. And as such, we have individuals within the Republican Party and within government who do identify with the small L libertarian philosophy, be it the likes of former Congressman Ron Paul, current United States Senator Rand Paul, his son, also Congressmen Justin Amash of Michigan and Thomas Massey of Kentucky, respectively, but also those maybe who are more in the constitutional approach, be it Mike Lee or Ted Cruz in the United States Senate. Now, I'm not going to pretend that Rand Paul or Ted Cruz or Mike Lee, for that matter, represent my ideas 100%. And I don't think that should be the goal for libertarians, is that we can't have these ideological purity tests. So the goal of this podcast is to reach out beyond the libertarian echo chambers, to reach out beyond those individuals that will hear our message and believe in our message to begin with. I've recently gotten into some flack with some other libertarian slash liberty-minded publications, which will not be named here on this podcast. But if you want to go explore the venture, please feel free to follow me on Twitter at @bnicholsliberty. Again, that's my Twitter handle at @bnicholsliberty, and I'm sure you'll find the interactions that I've had recently with this other publication in terms of making cancer jokes and trying to really alienate anybody that is not a 100% ideologically pure libertarian, as labeling them as a communist or a socialist. And I must say, as someone who myself came to libertarianism about 6 years ago, if I had begun to explore libertarian ideas and to try and get at the very least engaged within the libertarian community, to then be called a communist or a socialist, I must say it would have been very off-putting. And thankfully, in my ventures into libertarianism, I didn't have that happen to me personally. But I see it happen too often where, yes, those individuals who maybe are exploring the idea of liberty and the idea of small L libertarianism, they start to question their own beliefs, but at the same time, they have to question our beliefs. And when they're questioning our beliefs, they're met with a hostile reaction, which to them is very off-putting. Now, I'm going to give an anecdote, but one of my close friends who will be actually be coming on this podcast at some point down the road, Kimberly Ross from Red State, she likes to identify herself as politically homeless because of the fact that in 2016, she couldn't support Donald Trump as a Republican, and that hurt her because she had never really come to a situation within her personal life where Donald Trump, or where the Republican Party rather, was not reflecting her ideas so openly and so vagrantly going ahead and just completely ignoring what they were supposed to be representing. So after the 2016 election, to keep this anecdote short, Kimberly began to look for alternatives. And one area she did start to look was the likes of exploring libertarianism. And one issue for Kimberly that is, and when I have her onto this podcast, it's going to be one of the main things that we focus on, is that of abortion. Now, I've made my personal views on abortion on the We Are Libertarian podcast quite clear. I'm very pro-life because I view the individual being a human being as a sentient being that when it's, even if it's a fetus within the womb, it will turn into a human being once it's born. It's not going to turn into a tree. It's not going to turn into a car. It's going to be a human being. And therefore, it should be afforded the rights of any other human being. Now, within the libertarian circles, the argument between pro-life and pro-choice is a very fervent one. And I fell into the pro-life camp of libertarianism, which I feel is starting to have some more strength going forward and some more momentum with the likes of Julie Borowski or an Austin Peterson, who really, they've taken the flag of the pro-life libertarian movement and have made it their own. But when Kimberly began to explore into libertarianism and actually was exploring the idea of voting for Governor Johnson, she started to dip her foot in the water in terms of exploring some of the libertarian views. And when she made her pro-life stances known, she was vehemently attacked by the pro-choice libertarians that may be more vocal than some others. And it really turned her off. And that was disheartening for me because I know that she was politically homeless, looking for something as an alternative to what the current GOP is structured to be. So, again, going back to the main goal of the Brian Nichols Show going forward, it is, again, to enlighten, to educate, and to inform. So with that being said, we're going to be bringing in people from all political persuasions, because I find it important to not only welcome in dissenting voices and voices that, maybe they aren't 100% aligned with us ideologically, but at the very least, they're willing to listen, and they're at the very least willing to learn. So, going forward, I will be bringing on individuals from not only what we might consider to be the establishment Republican right wing, but also the Tea Party conservatives, the socialist and communist Democrats and leftists, progressives across the board, because I think it's going to be important not only for them to be exposed to some libertarian ideals, but also for us as libertarians or whatever political persuasion you are, to hear a different point of view that you might not be comfortable with, and to the very least understand why it is that the person on the microphone from the other side of the political aisle believes what they believe. So with that being said, I'm hoping that this podcast going forward will be one of those podcasts that you will listen to weekly. And because I did want to keep today's show a little short, I did want to dig into one of the top issues of the day, and that is that the House of Representatives voted down the USA Rights Act, which was a bill that was pushed forward by Representative Justin Amash with regards to exploring the authorities of the FISA Act, Section 702. So we'll get into this really quick. I'm going to read a very quick article from Reason.com from Scott Shackford, basically saying the U.S. Rights Act pushed in the House of Representatives by Justin Amash and Zoe Lofgren, I believe is how you say his name, of California, was not adopted after an intense debate. The vote failed 183 to 233. The U.S. Rights Act was an attempt to fix some serious privacy problems with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which, of course, is FISA, and those authorities under Section 702. Though FISA is supposed to be used for snooping on foreign targets, it has been brought to bear against Americans and used for domestic crime cases secretly without warrants, which obviously is a vast, big no-no with regards to the Fourth Amendment violations that were taking place under that. Section 702 was set to expire at the end of 2017, and civil rights groups and privacy-minded lawmakers demanded reforms so that the FBI and National Security Administration would be required to get warrants. That sounds like, you know, pretty good idea, before accessing or even querying these databases for information and communications from Americans. So that's what the USA Rights Act was meant to do, and unfortunately it failed. About two-thirds of Republicans voted against the amendment, and about two-thirds of Democrats voted for it. So, as Scott says here, it wasn't really a party line vote, but the Democrats could have pushed it through had they all supported it. Several ranking Democrats openly supported increasing the powers of the surveillance state, even under a president they loathe. Then in parentheses it says House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and the ranking member of the National Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, both Democrats, ended up voting against Amash. And, you know, myself now speaking on that, I do find it absolutely, you know, not only ironic but hypocritical for the Democrats to do this, because especially the likes of Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff, because they have been two of the leading voices within the House leading this charge against Donald Trump and the Russia scandal. And it just take a step back from party line vote. Why on earth would you give the president of the United States, who you believe engaged in Russian meddling of the elections in order to subvert our democracy so he could win, why would you give him basically unilateral authority to violate the Fourth Amendment rights of all Americans in the name of quote-unquote security? It just doesn't make sense. Going back to Scott's piece here, instead, the House voted 256 to 164 in favor of the FISA Amendments Reauthorization Act of 2017. The bill doesn't just renew Section 702 for 6 years, but it also codifies permission for the FBI to access and use data secretly collected by Americans for a host of criminal cases that have nothing to do with protecting America from foreign threats, which really makes you question, myself speaking here, why the F in the word in the word FISA is even necessary at this point, because the F is supposed to be for foreign and it's being used on us here in America. Had a little cough there. Going back there, so it says the bill, there had been some attempts for the bill to get some warrant demands in, but as surveillance expert Marcy Wheeler has noted, the law was worded so that it applies only if you are a suspect of a crime. That is to say, people suspected of criminal activity have greater privacy protections under the law than those who just have their data communications snatched up en masse. The ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, said they are not thrilled. In a response from, God bless this name, Nima Sain Guliani, I believe is how you pronounce her name, their policy counsel, said, quote unquote, "The House voted today to give President Trump and his administration more spying powers. The government will use this bill to continue warrantless intrusions into Americans' private emails, text messages, and other forms of communication." She goes on to say, "No president should have this power. Yet, members of Congress just voted to hand it to the administration that has been labeled individuals as threats based merely on their religion, nationality, or viewpoints. The Senate should reject this bill and rein in government surveillance powers to bring Section 702 in line with the Constitution." Scott then continues, now that the reauthorization goes to the Senate, where Senators Rand Paul of Kentucky and Ron Wyden of Oregon have co-sponsored, mind you, Wyden is a Democrat and Rand Paul Republican, a Senate version of the USA Rights Act. And they both have already treated their responses to what happened in the House today, with Rand Paul stating, no American should have their rights taken, or their right to privacy taken away, hashtag filibuster. Very Trumpian, Rand tweeted that today. And then Senator Wyden saying, if this Section 702 bill comes to the Senate, I will filibuster it, which is, which we hear Scott continues to say, it's filibuster time. Clearly, Paul and the others need to try and book some time on Fox and Friends to convince President Donald Trump to switch his position back to opposing domestic surveillance, which is obviously a pretty direct homage to this morning's incidents, this morning being Thursday, where President Trump tweeted seemingly directly in response to Judge Napolitano on Fox and Friends, where Judge Napolitano basically looked at the camera and told President Trump not to support this. Trump then tweeted out that he wasn't going to support it, and that I think it was like something along the lines of saying, was this the FISA action that was used to spy on me when I was running for president? And then just, I think it was 2 or 3 hours later, he then said, oh, well, that being said, I've gone ahead and said we still need to get the bad guys. And of course, that's me paraphrasing. But it's interesting the fact that that Trump, after like 2 hours or so, decided to change his views back. Must be John Kelly to the rescue to try and save that from President Trump. And then, of course, going forward, one of the best leaders of liberty here in the House, Justin Amash, tweeted his response to the amendment's failure, stating, thank you to the 183 Republicans and Democrats who voted yes on the Amash-Lofgren USA Rights Amendment. We fell short today, but a large growing coalition is standing up for the American people. We will never stop defending the Fourth Amendment, our Constitution, and all our rights. And well said to Justin Amash there, because I think one important thing that we seem to forget is that, you know, individuals like Justin Amash and individuals like Rand Paul, though they don't necessarily reflect pure 100% libertarian ideology, they're making moves, and they are drawing attention to these issues that libertarians do in fact hold near and dear. And right there on Justin Amash's tweet, we fell short today, but a large growing coalition is standing up for the American people. That's huge. Because now this is no shade at the Libertarian Party, the National Libertarian Party, but we have no elected officials in Congress or in the Senate who are Libertarian Party members. And that's just reality. So instead of going for this ideological purity, saying we need to, you know, only support libertarian candidates, we got guys like Justin Amash and Rand Paul who are on the battle lines right now pushing for libertarian, social, civil libertarian views that I don't think we would ever have a chance of really making some moves if it were not for them right now doing what they're doing. That's where the entire hashtag Stand With Rand came from, was back to his initial filibusters. And Rand Paul has been one of, if not the loudest voices for libertarian views in the Senate, especially with his noted filibusters of not only now the NSA spying, but also he did this in 2015. And with regards to the dronings of American citizens, Rand Paul has been one of the leading voices in the Senate. And Justin, though he is no Ron Paul, Justin Amash has really, he's made some leaps and bounds in terms of helping lead for the liberty movement, actually getting some stuff done. With that being said, I do want to keep this podcast today relatively short. But the FISA Act, it definitely hurts to see the act fail, where it could have easily passed had just one third more of the Democrats in the House just go ahead and vote party line with their party, and then the Freedom Caucus to lead the way. But alas, we now will fall back to the likes of Rand Paul in the Senate, along with Senator Wyden. I know Mike Lee has made it a point to say that he was actually making his entire vote contingent on the fact that Justin Amash's revisions to the NSA, the FISA Act, which was the USA Rights Act, his vote is contingent on that passing through. So I'm curious to see if maybe Mike Lee will start to stand with Rand Paul and Senator Wyden with regards to, at the very least, trying to make sure that Americans, citizens cannot be targeted with this mass collection of data to end up hurting them going down the road, especially with regards to that information being taken from... Really, when you think about it, it's just being taken at any time and can be used at any time against you without your consent, without the Fourth Amendment being at all considered. That's going to be the FISA response that I had today. If you enjoyed this conversation about FISA, I know it was very brief, and it is a little boring with just me on the podcast. Totally understand that. But we are going to be going ahead and adding a lot of fun guests coming to the podcast to hop on. We'll play some back and forth verbal sparring just so we can try to get things going forward in terms of exploring the option of bringing in some individuals outside of our movement to help push liberty forward. If you enjoyed today's podcast, feel free to donate at Patreon, which can be found in the links, or go ahead and follow me on Twitter. Again, my tweet handle is @BNicholsLiberty. @BNicholsLiberty. And no, I'm not just that guy who had a viral tweet about pot. I did a snarky tweet about the dangers of marijuana, and I listed off the quote unquote dangers, which were actually stats that were about alcohol, and ended up getting like 440,000 likes. And I was a little shocked that morning when I woke up and I had 13,000 notifications on my phone. Go ahead, follow me on Twitter, and be sure to invite your conservative, your not libertarian friends, be they far left, far right, what have you, because we need those individuals to listen to this podcast the most. Because when it comes down to it, I know all you fans out there, you're individuals who are deep in the liberty movement. You're 100% on board with liberty, and really you are the individuals out there who are, you're at the front lines. You're really going for you're really the ones leading the charge behind the scenes. I think that gets underappreciated. The problem is, I think we've gotten stuck sometimes within our own echo chambers, and we really need to get out there and bring liberty to the mainstream. We had a chance with Gary Johnson in 2016. Unfortunately, Gary and Bill Weld were not, in my personal opinion, the ideal candidates to lead that forward. And we had a lot of great opportunities that were lost during that election. And I've had my personal sparring with Nicholas Sarwark, the chairman of the Libertarian Party, with how the Libertarian National Committee has, or rather, National Party has performed and conducted themselves in public, whether it's posting things about comparing the United States' freedoms to that of North Korea and implying that North Korea was more free than the United States, or posting satanic verses the week before Easter. I don't think that's exactly very productive public relations, but I digress. So with that being said, thank you for joining me here on the very first, the inaugural Brian Nichols Show podcast. I'm looking forward to many more podcasts to come. Again, if you like this, feel free to share this episode. Feel free to donate on Patreon. And again, feel free to follow me @BNicholsLiberty, both on Twitter as well as Facebook. We'll be sharing articles. But until then, we will talk to you next week. Have a good one.